was the moment I first failed him. This was my part in his pattern. She could not say she had kept his secrets when it would have been better for him if she had told them, or that she had given away the ones she should have guarded. She could not excuse her competitive nature, nor could she fault it. She could not say it was that Baba had given her the watch and not him, because she had always wanted it, had done everything to become the child who would receive it. The only guilt she could carry without questioning it or pushing it aside, the only thing she could land on with any certainty, was the simple facts of their lives tonight. That it was she who sat beneath the chandelier light adorned in jewelry, and her brother who roamed the hall, wishing he were elsewhere, or worse, wishing he could be back and feel as loved, as welcome, as at home. 2. As Amar approached the courtyard, he felt that familiar rush from years ago, the fear of being caught quickening his step, the promise of seeing Amira that made his entire body a single heartbeat. Clouds passed rapidly, hardly any stars were out, and the moon was so bright it seemed to have been placed just to shine a spotlight on them. Had he even once, in the years he had been gone and the months before, when they no longer spoke, doubted that he still loved her? Amira was seated on the cement floor. The red of her outfit appeared burgundy, the green almost black. The bells chimed when she moved. Her lips were purple from the dark, or purple from the cold. Her hair pulled up tight in a bun. Just a few stray hairs lit silver. And when she stood to greet him, the movement of her body attracted his entire attention, and though she waved shyly, her smile was generous. Impossible. Impossible that he had ever stopped loving her. Not since his love for her first announced itself at that party years ago, when she looked up from the soda she sipped through her striped straw, and then walked to where he had been leaning against the wall, minding his own business. She had asked the first question, and he, who did not like speaking to almost anyone, answered, and then asked his own. He was only 17 then. He had carved their initials into his windowsill that very night. "I thought maybe you'd changed your mind," she said.
"I thought maybe I had too."
He did not know why he lied so totally, but it made her laugh. "How much time do we have?" she asked. "Not nearly enough." But he shrugged, and they took a seat on the cement, cross-legged and not quite facing each other. This was where the hotel staff likely came to smoke. It was tucked away from the hotel and any window.
"Let's make the most of our time, then, and speak honestly," she said.
She was still Amira, taking charge, forming her plans out loud, so deliberate that anyone around her would be convinced they had wanted it before she even suggested it.
"How long has it been?" he asked.
3 years. Maybe more." She did not pause before the reply. The air between them was changed from what he remembered. There had always been tenderness, but now there was a charge too. He was aware of his body and hers alone. Of course he had felt this before. But something about the tone of her voice, the way she looked at him and then away, made him think it would not be impossible to reach out and touch her. They had been children together, and were so young when they began to love each other. He knew that when he looked back. Some days, in the life he had now, it seemed unbelievable
that they could have had so ardent a love without ever touching. But that is what it had been. Now her shirt was cut low, and a shadow gestured to her breast. He looked down at his hands, holding on to his knees. By now they both must have become different people. But what he felt for Amira, it was as though she had been tucked in a compartment in his heart that hadn't changed, and seeing her now, he knew it never would. He could return to her at any age and feel for her the way he always had. He knew, with such certainty, it shamed him, that it would not matter if he fell in love one day and married. Amira would continue to exist as a love entirely apart. If ever they could resume, even just for an afternoon, if ever she called. A sin was not a sin if it were for her. A risk was not a risk.
What did you end up studying? He asked.
Do you like waking up before the rest of the world? When you were little, did you think the moon followed you? Psychology, with an emphasis in child development.
Done with school?
She shook her head. She was beginning graduate school in the fall. She said she wanted to do research. She asked him what he studied. When he didn't answer right away, the peace of her face was disturbed. She was being careful like his mother, not knowing what questions to ask.
I had to work, but I've saved a little money now, and I'm going to try to go back to school.
All of that was true. What he wanted now was to be honest with her. He had already lost. Being dishonest would not win anything back for him now. Mama and Baba once mentioned you were in India. She moved the row of her bangles down her arm, then up again. Their curves twinkled in the dark.
I wasn't.
I didn't think so, she said. And she smiled, as though she was proud she had intuited it. Offering her the truth seemed to relax her. Her eyes were as big as a cat's in the dark.
What else did you think?
She shrugged. I couldn't imagine you being convinced to do something you didn't want to do.
He was quiet.
He had wanted to change for her. So, she said, tenderly now, asking the one question no one else had. Where have you been? Leaves circled beside them, and then dispersed. The little pearls that dangled from her earrings quivered.
I was in a bad place after us, he said. You know me.
She winced. He listened to the scrape of leaves and wondered if it could be effortless, confessing it all to Amira.
I couldn't go to class, and if I did, I couldn't focus. I fought with my father more than I spoke to anyone. I was drinking a lot, and I wanted something stronger.
He paused, not knowing how to continue. For years he had hidden his habits from her, but feared she had known. He had always thought that was why she had ended things, not the excuse she gave of her parents, having hardly thought of them throughout their relationship, but that she herself had grown tired of waiting for him.
It got worse. I got into worse fights with my father. I wasn't myself, or if I was, I wasn't anyone I recognized.
The beeping of the safe. Mama's pale face in the hallway. Hadia asking if anyone had seen her watch. Amira looked at him with fear and care, and it was thrilling to see a reaction in her, even if it was just sympathy, the least personal of investments.
Before I left, I started taking pills to silence this voice in my head telling me, you've sinned, you'll sin again. Home for you is a place you stand outside of, looking in. Eventually, it felt like I had no other choice. Or, I wanted that and nothing else. There was one fight with my father I couldn't take back. I moved to LA. I wasn't sure I'd stay, but I'm still there now. It's hard to remember that first year. I worked temporary jobs. I helped move furniture. I kept what Mama would call bad company. But about 2 years ago, I met someone who helped me get clean. I was lucky. That voice had finally quieted, and I started to feel like I could breathe. Not breathe easy, just breathe. And now, if I do find myself walking alone or by the ocean looking out, and if I do think of God, I can't explain it, Amira, but it's different. It's not that I'm at home where I live now, but at least there, I'm not the only one standing outside. He was surprised by what he had most wanted to share with her. He didn't mention who had helped him get clean. Realized he didn't want to say her name. Even thinking of her next to Amira made what he had felt for her in the past year shrink. I don't understand, was all she said, her voice small like a squeak. Clean? Maybe because he needed someone to know, or maybe to watch her face twist to prove her care for him, or to give her an image that would haunt her the way she haunted him. He rolled up his shirt sleeve and offered her his arm. And even in the darkness, he could see the splatter of dots following his vein. A dark, small speck. A permanent stain. So heavy and black. It cannot tell good from evil. Oh, Amar, she whispered. She touched his arm. He felt a current shoot from his arm through his entire body, and he jerked back, unrolled his sleeve, and buttoned it again at the wrist. Her eyes shimmered. You can't tell anyone, he said, and his voice was rougher now. Not where I live, and not what I did. We may not speak anymore, but I have never and will never break your trust. He wanted to believe her. Do you still? She whispered. He shook his head. Some days it feels like that was another life entirely. Other days, I'm so certain I will again. It's almost as if it's my destiny. As if I'm in a holding cell waiting for the sentence to be handed down to me. But I know if I did, I'd never stop. She looked at him the way people sometimes looked at him, as though their love for him were useless. A love that pained them more than it gave them anything in return. I don't see the guys I met when I first moved anymore. I got a new job, and I work other ones on the side. I cook at a restaurant in town that has a good reputation. I'm good at it. It's hard work, but I'm valued there. He was not sure what she was thinking, if she was happy for him, or if she was thinking what he imagined his father would. But she nodded at least. Promise me you never will again, she said. I think it's more important that I promise myself, he said, and she half smiled at that. Every day he lived without it felt like an extra day he was lucky for, and he feared using now the way he had once feared his dreams. Not at all in the sunlight,
but then it would be a certain hour, a darkening of the sky. And he was terrified that at night, they would come for him again. She reached out her pinky, like a child. And like a child, he took it. Again, that current that lit his body.
Kasam?
She asked, the Urdu word for swear it. Kasam. She kissed her thumb, and then he kissed his. She tugged his pinky tight for a second. Then she let go. He thought she was about to say it was time to go back. But instead, she asked, "Do you remember that party? The first time we really spoke?" He remembered every question. He remembered how many birds sat on the line and how many took flight. "My friends had dared me," she said. And even though it happened so long ago, he felt crushed that she had not walked up to him of her own accord. "All the mosque girls thought you were something strange, always so quiet and by yourself. But I knew you from when you came over, and I'd liked you for years. How you were good in a way unseen to them, to yourself even. They didn't think I'd have the nerve, but I knew they'd given me a gift. Under the guise of a dare, I could do what I wanted to, just talk to you."
"A lucky dare."
"Even knowing all of what we know now?"
"Especially knowing."
She smiled at him sadly. "You know, my mama saw us that day. In the car on the way home, I was scolded in front of my brothers, my father. I was so mortified. Abbas Bhai spoke up for me then, and he told mama to calm down. He said to her, 'Of course they can talk to each other. You all are the ones who make just talking such a sin. And what do you expect? We see each other all the time, and can't even act human. Leave her alone,' he said. 'Amar's a good kid.' He didn't mean anything by it. Let her talk to him if she wants. So Mama relented. She always listened to Abbas. Abbas was her moral compass when she wasn't sure what to do. But I was still so embarrassed. I thought I'd never speak to you in person again."
"Until I came to your door the night."
"Yes. And you were the only one who comforted me even a little. I thought of how Abbas Bhai had defended you, defended us. Hearing the knock and seeing you of all people, and realizing how reassured I felt at the sight of you. Even at that horrible moment, I thought it was some kind of sign." They fell silent. She was going to break his heart when she got up to return to the wedding. He already felt it coming his way. "You know, Amar, our sadness might have looked different, but I was affected too. They didn't want me to come tonight, did you know that? Mama has often mentioned you over the years to try and explain why she had been so harsh with me. Or to point out how well I was doing now. And wasn't I glad that things worked out the way they had? But even if she was right, I'd still dissolve into tears. I'd hate her again, like I hated her the first time she said I had brought shame to our family. And how that shame was worse than grief, because I had chosen to bring it upon them." He could not reach out to comfort her, even as it pained him to watch her bite and release her lips in the way she would when she did not want to be upset. He could only keep his hands at his sides, clenched into fists. She continued, "Once Mama told me you were my open vein. You were the wound that, no matter how many years passed by, how much healing had been done, if prodded,
would open and bleed fresh again. But I assured her tonight not to be silly, that I could come. And no one knew if you'd be here anyway.
She looked down at her bangles, spun one around. He was starting to feel at the edge of a desperate sadness. He had already lost her. Seeing her now was like losing her all over again.
After they found out about us, Mama and Baba took away my phone and my computer. They told me every rumor they had heard about you, and I wasn't sure anymore if what they said was true or a lie. "Do you want a husband who drinks?" they would yell at me. "Do you want a husband who lies to you? How can a man who does not respect his parents ever respect you?"
She paused and looked at him, as if to see if her words had hurt him. Then she smiled to herself and continued. "Once I had loved you in such a way that, even if it were all true, it still wouldn't change anything. If they were right, that you were headed nowhere good, that's where I wanted to be too. You say that there is an entire year of your life you don't remember? And I feel the same. They took me on a long trip, Syria, Iraq, then India. I felt calm on Ziyarat. I felt for the first time that all was working out like it was meant to, that we were meant to part. But every time I held the zari, I'd think of you and pray for you. That you were happy and doing well. That you'd gone to school and that you'd stopped drinking. I had no idea that it was much worse. I already felt so terrible. I don't know what I'd have done if I had known. I stayed in India for a month. There, my life in California felt so far. I watched my cousins as they married suitable men, and I noticed how there was peace between them and their parents. Peace and unity that came from their listening. I wanted that peace. And I thought that maybe they would never feel for their husbands the way I felt for you. But theirs wouldn't be a false life either. Just different. And easier in many ways. And that is what Mama had wanted me to understand.
She released the hair from her bun. Her nervous habit. Any lull in a conversation, and she would take her hair down or tie it up again.
"What had we been thinking?" she said quietly, leaning her head back and speaking to the sky, her neck stretched in the moonlight. "Approaching one another so openly, just asking to be seen. We should have never spoken to each other, if a proper way is what we wanted. We should have just waited for each other in silence."
He followed the curve of her neck until it plunged into her shirt, then looked away. "No one saw us. I just needed more time."
"You still don't know."
"Know what?" Again, she looked at him, as though the sight of him pained her, and he was suddenly afraid to know the answer.
"I didn't know how Mama found out either. How she knew details. How she could describe a moment between us at our park and then strike me across my face."
Her voice was shaking.
"I didn't know until a year ago, and Mama finally told me, thinking that the vein had closed. But again, I just wept."
She glanced at the door that led back to the wedding, and then down at her arms that cradled her knees, still deliberating telling him. The wind lifted her hair. Amar held his breath.
"Your mother knew, Amar. She came to mine. She told her to end things between us. For both our sakes."
Where was he?
Her entire experience of the wedding was being overshadowed by worry for Amar. Dinner was done, and all the plates cleared. Hadia and Tariq had cut the cake, and it was being served. And still, he could not be located. She had not seen him since the nikah, and that was almost an hour ago. What was most important to her was that he be there for the family photograph, so she could finally replace the framed one that hung above their fireplace.
I'm going to go look for him, she told Huda.
People had just begun to dip their forks into their cake slices.
Mama, Huda said, it's your daughter's wedding. Can't you focus on that?
But Leila was already walking out the hall and into the lobby, where the appetizers and drinks had long been cleared away, and now children from the wedding were playing. Leila stepped out of the hotel into the parking lot. She shivered. Nothing about the parking lot told her to look there. It occurred to her to look in the hall to see if she could find the Ali girl. Leila stepped back into the lobby, and just when she decided she would go to Rafiq, she saw Amar walking down a long hallway, and she rushed forward to meet him. The look on his face unsettled her. Something was wrong. She slowed her step. When he was almost in front of her, Amar looked up from the ground and lifted his hand, as if to stop her from coming any closer.
Don't, he said.
What happened? You were doing so well.
Am I a child that needs to be monitored?
He barked at her. She recoiled from his tone. His eyes were slightly glossy. He seemed to sway just a little. Had he been drinking? The question pierced her as she searched his face. She stepped closer to sniff for the scent of alcohol, but could only pick up the heavy stench of cigarettes. She pressed her hand against his chest and tried to calm him. He stepped back, swatted her hand away, her bangles clinking against each other. She touched her wrist, shocked at the force of his impact more than any dull pain she felt.
Amar! Hadia chooses who she is with. Hadia chooses someone who is not even Shia.
And how do you react?
You throw her an extravagant wedding.
He laughed an unnerving laugh, just one false note. He gestured to everything around him. The waiters clearing the cake plates averted their eyes as they walked past.
People can hear you, Amar. You're yelling.
Let them hear. Maybe then you will listen to what I'm saying. All you care about is what people will think, what people will say. It wasn't true. He was just like his father, letting his anger cloud his judgment. She looked helplessly around the hall. The few guests who were there looked once toward them and then at each other, then returned quickly to the main hall, whispering.
I did exactly what Hadia is being celebrated for.
No, I did what I thought was so important to you. I chose someone from the community. And I loved her, Mama. I loved her. His voice broke into a whisper, an instant dip in her stomach, and she was sick.
Oh, Ami.
She tried again to place her hand on his chest. And again, he swatted her away. Another guest looked in their direction. Leila pinched the bridge of her nose. She stood with her eyes closed. She had not prepared for this, had never thought he would find out, especially not after so much time had passed. Amar swayed on his feet.
How could you, Mama? You, out of everyone.
His voice was hoarse. She had done the right thing. That girl was bound to break his heart.
You were working so hard, Amar. You were so determined. I didn't want you to have a single distraction. You went behind my back. You ruined what I had been working for.
The dull headache had become a migraine. She pinched her nose again to keep herself from shaking.
I didn't know,
she whispered. And it was true.
Huda approached them then, holding up her sari so she could walk faster.
What is going on here? People have begun to notice. Huda spat the words.
Admit it. Admit that if it had been Hadia or Huda, you would have reacted differently.
It is not true. It is not why.
Leila's voice was shaking, but she found she couldn't look him in the eye.
Look around you. Look at how true it is.
The guest book fell to the floor. The table holding it up collapsed, and with it came crashing a flower arrangement, the flowers spilling out and the water from the vase darkening the carpet. Children who had been playing in the lobby stared. One of them started to cry, and an older one lifted him up. They were going to tell their parents. There is a scary man in the lobby yelling at Leila auntie and kicking the table, they would say. Leila could not move. Huda knelt to the ground and lifted the table up and straightened the cloth on it. She picked the guest book up and unwrinkled the pages that had bent, lifted up the vase and tried to put the flowers back in. But they looked so messy, Huda hid them under the table. Acting on his anger seemed to make Amar calmer. He was breathing very heavily.
Please, Amar. People are going to come and look. I thought you needed to concentrate on your studies. You were doing so well. I thought she would be a distraction.
You never thought I'd do well.
Sachi, Ami. I swear I did.
You wouldn't have gone to her mother if you thought I'd do well. If you really believed in me. You wouldn't have gone behind my back. You would have trusted that that could be my life.
Come with me, Amar.
Huda grabbed hold of his arm and pulled him. He pushed her off of him.
Let go of me. You are all liars, backbiters, and you make me feel like I am the liar. You tell me that to go behind the back of the stranger is to eat his flesh? What about me?
He jabbed his finger to his chest.
I am your son. I am your son, and you went behind my back. And you lied to me. And you tell me again and again that I'm the one who has lied to you? I'm the one who has betrayed you?
Leila felt as if she had been struck across her face. She wanted to hold him until he stopped trembling and yelling, or she wanted to run to the bathroom, lock the door behind her, spend the rest of the evening unseen by anyone.
Amar!
Huda hissed.
Why did you come if you were going to make a scene?
Huda gripped his arm again, tighter this time, and she shook it.
You all betrayed me. Why did you even call me back?
He was staring unfocusedly at the ground, as though he had begun talking to himself.
Because we want you here, Huda said.
You've never acted like it.
Because Hadia wants you here.
Leila did not know she had begun crying until she moved her hand from her mouth and saw her fingers were wet. Huda held on to both of Amar's arms until he stopped trying to fight her.
Mama, go back inside, Huda instructed her.
It was a mistake, Amar, Leila said, her voice very thin, and she tried to reach out to touch him.
Please, I made a mistake.
But it only made him angrier. He twisted to get out of Huda's grip.
Maybe who I am hurts you, Mama, but I have no choice over that. But you have intentionally hurt me.
Go, Mama. Go back inside,
Huda was yelling at her now, too.
Huda let go of Amar for just a moment and pointed to the main hall.
Now!
Layla looked from Huda to Amar. She had never seen her son look so defeated and still so angry. Not against her. She turned around and walked into the hall in a daze. Her hand over her mouth so tight, it was as if she were keeping something from spooling out of her. Then the two bright lights of the chandeliers. The cacophony of voices. The MC taking the stage to announce the mirror ritual. A crowd of guests had gathered by the stage, and others sat in their seats, just waiting for a show. She hoped it meant nothing that her mother and sister were not by her side as she was led to the mirror. Hordes of people gathered around the stage. As a child, this had been her favorite wedding ritual. It seemed the most bizarre, and therefore the most magical. Once she was one of the girls who watched wide-eyed from the bottom of the stage, wanting to catch a glimpse. How the bride and groom sat with a mirror between them, facing one another, under a beautiful sheer red cloth that shimmered, their gazes lowered, and only lifted to each other's reflection. It was a ritual that had come about in the days when one never even saw the face of their spouse before they were wed. It had been how her grandparents on both sides had first seen one another. By the time her parents had gotten married, it was a formality. Her father had visited her mother's home twice. They had never spoken in private, but had seen each other from across the room. Now that it was Hadia's turn, it was no more than a performance. She had memorized Tariq's freckle beneath his eyebrow, the spot on his beard that grew in a swirl. Each generation lost touch bit by bit. By the time it was her children's turn, would there even be a point?
Look, someone said, and she did.
She caught sight of her own reflection first. From the angle, it looked as though she were looking onto the surface of very still water. Red cloth instead of the sky. Little specks of light filtered through the fabric. Then she met Tariq's eyes, his upside-down reflection. It was Tariq, clearly and definitely, but it did not look like him. He winked at her and grinned, and she smiled. The mirror was taken away, the red net removed, and the room lit golden again. It was time for the photographs, one with each family, until it was finally her family's turn. And then, it would all be over.
Happy?
Huda said to him in Urdu. She let go of him. The guest book had been placed back, but the tablecloth was uneven. Amar tugged at it to try and straighten it. Huda made a typical Urdu joke about how quick Amar was to feel concerned about the appearance of the wedding. He shot her a dark look.
Come outside and speak with me, she said gently.
I don't want to speak with you.
Then who do you want to speak with?
He paused to think about it. He was unsteady on his feet. Hadia.
Never me, nay? She said.
He looked at her. He felt bad. It seemed as though an explanation was being asked of him, but he had none to offer. He was depleted. He had made Mama cry. He hadn't seen her for years, missed her all the time. And then, on the one day he did see her, he had made her cry. He had kicked the stupid guest book stand. Some kid had even yelled it out loud. He was ready to go home. And that thought came with its own ache. Where, exactly, was home? Huda led him gently by the arm to the parking lot, as if he were a child that had thrown a tantrum
and was now being escorted out. But this was not a tantrum. He was justified in his anger. They had meddled in his life.
"You don't have to babysit me for them," he mumbled.
"What happened just now?"
"Whatever happened, happened long before that."
"Ah, our poet Amar," she said in Urdu, and hit his arm lovingly. They took a seat on the sidewalk, facing the parking lot. Once, he would have been irritated by her teasing. Now he was grateful for the sign of intimacy.
"Couldn't you wait until after the wedding to fight, if you've already waited so long?"
She was speaking very softly. Past the parking lot, across the street, store signs blinked neon colors. A gas station. A liquor store. A store that bought and sold gold. He wanted to go back inside and find Amira, talk to her one last time. He wanted to leave this place and never come back. He wanted to begin this night again, wanted it to never end.
"When did you become so smart?" he asked Huda.
"I've always been," he smiled.
"Just me that trailed behind, then?"
She touched his arm and left her hand there. "Let's go back inside," she said after a pause.
"Not yet."
He placed his hands in his pockets. He still had some cash. At touch, it felt like 40. He pulled out his cigarettes.
"Do you mind?"
he asked her.
To his surprise, she shook her head.
"You deserve one, after what happened in there," she said, gesturing behind them to the hotel. He laughed, and lit his cigarette, and said, through the corner of his mouth,
"You've loosened up, and you're the one who's earned it, the way you handled us."
"Haven't loosened up that much." He laughed again. She was also smiling. He watched the smoke leave him and rise into the dark sky. He was careful to turn his face away from her to blow. He and Huda seemed almost like friends. Almost like they could be. "Mama wants to take a family photo. All of us at the end of the wedding. Just before the Ruksati," she said.
"The part when everyone cries?"
"Yes."
"Will you cry?"
"She's my sister."
He tapped the cigarette and crushed the ash with his shoe.
"Our sister," she said. She was being very kind to him. He felt worse for expressing his anger.
"What's happening now?"
"The mirror part."
"Which one of you liked that?"
"Hadia."
"And when will it be your turn?"
He looked at her. "Probably not for a while."
"Will you call me back for it?"
She looked down at her wrists. She had worn silver bangles that matched the stitching on her outfit. He dropped the cigarette butt and watched it burn and then dim. "Why don't you stay? Then I won't have to call you." He buried his face in his hands. He was not crying. He had fucked up phenomenally. He had yelled at Mama in front of everyone. He knew that he should never have gone out to talk to Amira. But even knowing how he felt now, he couldn't much regret it.
"Amar, can I ask you a question?"
He nodded.
"Is it better for you in your life now? Hadia and I wonder."
"Not better. Easier, maybe."
They watched guests with young children leave the hall and head to their cars.
"Are you ready to come back?"
"Not yet."
"But you will come?"
He looked at her. He nodded. She stood up, straightened the pleats of her sari. When she moved,
light reflected off of each of the gems sewn into her suit.
The picture. Don't forget. Our family will be the last to be photographed. Then the Rukhsati.
The hard part.
Yes, the hard part.
Huda began to walk away. He called her name and she turned back. It was good speaking to you. He cupped his hands around his mouth.
As good as Hadia?
She smiled. Pretty close. He winked. But in the dark, he was not sure if she saw it. Then he was alone. The stars twinkled, and the neon light across the street glowed. If he had known there was a liquor store, he would not have gone back to the hotel bar. The last time he went, after Amira walked away, the bartender had kindly hinted that Amar could have only one more drink before he would be cut off. It was a hotel, he explained. They had stricter rules. It had nothing to do with him. He didn't care. He paid. He held up the clear glass and looked at it like it would be his last. The golden and generous pour. He calmed just at the sight of it, at its weight when not yet sipped. Then his throat burned as if the drink could grow flames that spread to lick his insides.
I have to tell you something, Amira had said, when they both knew they had to get up soon. He knew what it was going to be. He felt dizzy looking at her, as she swept her hair to one side. He had loved her when she was a girl hiding behind her mother's legs. When they played hide-and-seek, and he spotted her feet poking from beneath the branches, and he continued searching on purpose, not knowing why his heart thumped when he made the decision to keep looking. When she won the Quran competition at 11, and how when he heard her voice on the speaker reciting, he looked up and listened for once. And he had loved her when he was 17, watching the birds on the telephone wire take flight. And she stood and stepped toward him at last. And only after that had he named it love. She was engaged, promised to a man she would marry once she completed grad school. He was not surprised. The paths their lives would take had been set in motion long before this blow was delivered to him.
I wanted you to hear it from me, she said. I wanted the chance to see how you were doing once more if I could, and tell you myself.
Arranged? He asked.
Initially, she said.
It stung. So she loved him. If there were other loves awaiting Amar, he knew there would be little loves, not, my whole life has led up to this moment with you. Every memory with you is electric. If you are there, it is you on the fence post with legs swinging, or you sipping from the striped straw. Everyone else is out of focus, or not there at all. Are you happy? He asked.
I am, she said. And then she twisted again the row of bangles on her wrist. I'm content. My parents are happy.
He was a dentist, a few years older. What would Amar become then to Amira? Oh, she might tell someone one day. That was my brother's friend. Or even less spoken, she would keep it a secret. One day she might push her son in the swing and look up to two kids sitting beneath a tree, too shy to scoot any closer. And she might remember herself at 17, defying everyone, risking everything, just to meet the boy from her community everyone warned her about. Before she left, they stood face to face. She returned the jacket he had draped over her shoulders.
I may not see you again, and we may not speak again, she said. But whatever comes,
I want you to know. There is a part of me that will always be who I was when I wrote that note and left it on your pillow. I never regretted that. I will always hope that you're happy and safe and healthy. I will pray you keep your promise. And that, wherever you are at home there. He thought, if he were to speak, his voice would break.
What's it like?
She whispered. Their old game. That first question she had written him. And she looked up at him with her big eyes. He had no answer. He allowed himself to hold her in his arms, and she rested her head against his chest. They stayed like that. His whole body was alive. He cast a shadow over her face when she lifted her face to his. He moved her hair from her eyes, and he looked at her for one long moment, then kissed her forehead. Now he crossed the street. The light in the liquor store window blinked open. A bell sounded as he stepped in. The bottle he bought was the smallest one they carried, and he was proud of himself when it was the one he reached for. He knew his limits. It fit in the inside of his jacket pocket, but was clunky. He needed to rest for just a minute before he could step back inside the main hall. He sat alone in the courtyard. He felt dizzy if he tried to stand. He should have eaten. He couldn't remember the last thing he had eaten or when. People were lining up to take pictures with the bride and groom when he snuck past. Soon it would be his family's turn. He would tell Mama he was very sorry. They had been right about him. Eventually, Amira would have realized it on her own, too. So it did not matter how. It was inevitable. He was better off in L.A. He rested his head in his hands. And then a memory presented itself to him at so strange a time and so unvisited before. He wondered if it could even be true. He has thrown a tantrum at maybe 11 and has left his house to sit on the cement driveway beneath his basketball hoop. The sky draining of its color, but not before filling first, with pink, orange, indigo, and violet clouds. When the door opens, it is his father and not his sister or his mother that has come after him. And even though his father's kurta pajama is white and easily dirtied, he takes a seat beside him on the ground. And Amar still thinks of him, then, as Baba. He moves his basketball from one hand to the other, its rough orange surface, and he is not speaking. And Baba looks at the street and the cars passing, and maybe the people in the cars wondering, what is wrong with them? Amar, his father is trying to talk to him. Why do you think like this, these foolish thoughts, that you don't belong? He holds the basketball close to him, rests his chin on its curved surface. Another car passes, and the person inside, not looking at them. When it becomes clear that Baba is waiting for an answer, that the sky will turn black before he is satisfied with the silence, Amar shrugs. If only he could remember now what the hurt was about. Maybe that he does not want to pray, and maybe that he does not want to sit still when their mother makes them listen to the duas, and he gets in ear-twisting trouble for making it into a joke, for trying to make eye contact with Hadia or Huda, until one of them starts to laugh. Maybe just that everyone is good, except for him. Everyone has a lock in them that they have found a key to, and he is all shut up and closed with no key. So he looks to each of them when they are listening intently to the duas, thinking either there is no key, or that he was created without one, and maybe he does not really believe in angels. But maybe the ones on his shoulders look at each other, and they shake their heads and shrug, saying, "Well, we don't know what to do with this one. Even if God were to show him signs, he would not listen, because that is the way it is with some kids, when their hearts are just stained black." He must have said something, because Baba pokes his shoulder and says, "Don't you know, that's the thing. Everyone is not just good. Everyone is trying to be good. And everyone feels this way sometimes, that they are not good, and not good at trying either." "That's not true," Amar remembers saying to his father. "You are good." Hadia and Tariq smiled and posed as family after family lined up for the photographs. She was ready for the night to end. When the Ali family approached, Hadia saw at once that Amira Ali's face was flushed and her hair down and a little windswept. The photographer arranged each family member on the stage, and Amira was directed to sit by Hadia. Amira congratulated her. Hadia thanked her and looked at her for a second longer than she might have. Amira Ali's eyes were bright green, and Hadia could not decide if her face had that raw look of having just cried. "Wonderful," the photographer said. Hadia did not look into the lens. She swept the hall for Amar and could not find him. Mama sat alone at a far table, watching the hall empty of guests. From this distance, she could not see Mama's expression. Huda was near the stage, talking to Danny. But Hadia sensed right away that Huda was anxious. She crossed her hands in front of her, as if she were guarding herself. Hadia sometimes still returned to that conversation with Amira in the mosque parking lot years ago. It was just months before Amar was to run away. But of course, Hadia had not known that at the time. She remembered being surprised when Amira had asked to speak with her. She remembered how Amira nervously looked around the ladies' hall, filled with women mingling, and whispered, "Privately, please, 10 minutes, near the basketball hoop." By then, Hadia had glimpsed the contents of her brother's box. She had not told her parents, but she had told Huda. No details, just that they had formed some sort of relationship. "I know this is strange," Amira said when they were alone, "but I needed to speak to you. I don't know if Amar told you about us." Hadia shook her head no, then said, "But I had guessed." Amira sighed. "We were so foolish." Hadia remembered thinking that Amira was too young to look that sad, only 18. "My mother found out about us," Amira said. "Just 3 weeks ago. Amar and I have not really spoken since." "I'm sorry," Hadia had said, and she meant it. She found, in that moment, that she felt great affection for the girl, and oddly protective of her. "Mama and Baba forbid it. I wake up every morning just wanting to fall asleep. There is a part of me that knows all I want is this. All I want is to fight my parents for him." Later, Hadia would look back on that night and tell herself that Amira Ali had sought her out on purpose, to be someone who could listen to her as a sister, but could also hold in her heart love for Amar, and look beyond the limits of propriety that their parents could not. Hadia had hugged Amira, and Amira had leaned into the hug, let herself be consoled. It occurred to Hadia that in another life, in a life where her girlhood dream or her brother's dream came true, the two of them would have become sisters. "They say he drinks," They say he's no good, that I'm better off.
She was speaking into Hadia's shoulder, her voice muffled. There was truth to what her brother was being accused of.